Welcome, everyone. I'd like to open the Senate Committee on Education and Workforce Development. Here's what we're going to do today. We're going to hold a public hearing on Senate Bill 742 until 2:30, and then we are going to close that public hearing and open up a work session on Senate Bill 250, adopt amendments for consideration to vote to refer that bill to the Senate Revenue and Finance Committee. We are going to hold over Senate Bill 242 work session. Alas, there are more technical amendments that are needed. So with that, I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 742. We have our State Superintendent of Schools with us here, Susan Castillo, along with Senators Morris, Nelson, and Rep. Dembro. Frank, do you want to take the stand, or do you want to stay up here? Okay. Welcome.
Senator Hassan, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Susan Castillo, the Superintendent of Public Instruction for the state of Oregon, and I am here to very strongly endorse Senate Bill 742. Not only is this a moral imperative that this happen in our state, but it is an economic imperative, I believe, for the state of Oregon. As you know, as the state superintendent, I have focused a lot of my time and energy on the academic achievement gap and on raising standards for all of our kids. And we tell our children in Oregon schools that we want to help them dream big and have big goals for themselves and set high standards for themselves. And we work with our students, all kids, to be able to make a great plan for their future. And yet, we have children who, because of our current residency rules for our university system, are really denied or limited in their access to be able to go on to college because we don't allow for in-state tuition for a population of students in our state, and we need to change that. These are students that are working hard, that have been doing all the right things that they need to do in order to be successful in school and to plan for a great, positive future so that they can contribute further to the state of Oregon. And so we need to support that because we know if they're successful, our entire state benefits from that success. So I am here. I'm going to keep my testimony short. I know there are a lot of people in line to speak before you today about this bill. Thank you for allowing me to deliver my remarks, and I really hope that we get this through your committee and that this ends up becoming a real, true, live opportunity for so many of our wonderful children here in Oregon. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any questions or comments to the superintendent? Thank you for coming here and testifying. As the legislators come up, Administrator Lindholm, do you want to give us a brief summary on this bill?
Certainly. Senate Bill 742 provides that qualified students who meet certain requirements are entitled to exemption from the non-resident tuition and fees at state institutions of higher learning and higher education. This act allows any challenge to the tuition equity law to be directly reviewed by the Oregon Supreme Court.
Thank you. Senators, Representative.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair and colleagues on the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to hear this bill. It's a measure that, as we all understand, is emotionally charged. There's a lot of depth of feeling on both sides of this issue. But it's a bill that I believe we should bring forward and advance because I believe it's the right thing to do. Many have wondered why in the world that I have chosen to be a chief co-sponsor of this bill. And I would like to share with you just a perspective that I have personally on this issue. When this bill previously came to the floor of the Senate, I spoke against the bill. And it arose out of, I would say, anger and frustration with the failure of our immigration policy. Having to engage an immigration attorney at great expense, eventually having to actually go to our then senator of Oregon in the Congress to assist in securing the visa to allow my then future son-in-law to come into this country. And I was angry. And I let that carry over into this consideration. Then I received a letter from a school counselor at Crescent Valley High School. She described this young lady, who was exceptionally bright, exceptionally talented, exceptionally motivated, and was looking to advance her life and improve her life with education, only to find the door closed because she could not afford three times the in-state tuition to attend Oregon State University. And then I came to the conclusion of, well, how do we frame this issue? And I believe we should frame it in the context of what is in the best interest of Oregon. And if we, by policy, create a circumstance in which we take a class of young people and deny them opportunity, are we improving Oregon? No, we're not. Oregon is not served by young people who wish to further their education, and we deny that opportunity. So I came down on the side of what is the right thing to do, knowing that this is a very, very difficult issue. My office has received calls that have been the most vicious of my tenure in the legislature over this issue. But I believe that we need to stand up and do the right thing and provide opportunities for these young people to improve their lives and, in fact, improve our state in the process. And colleagues, and all of our colleagues in the building, I hope, would look at this issue in that light. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hass, honorable Senate colleagues. I'm Michael Dembro. I'm state representative for House District 45. That's Northeast Portland to Park Rose. And I thank you for hearing this bill. It's an honor for me to present it to you, especially being flanked by these fine gentlemen on either side. Let me start off by putting this bill into some context. Senate Bill 742 is an important part of the effort that we're making this session to expand opportunity to more young Oregonians. We've heard again and again just how important it is for our young people to have post-secondary skills if Oregon is to come out of this recession and move our state's income level above the national average. This is the session for us to expand access to our public universities and to make sure that young Oregonians have the tools to be successful there. This committee has already passed Senate Bill 253, the 40-40-20 bill, designed to get more Oregonians a university education, and Senate Bill 254, expanding access to college credit for high school students all around the state to ease and shorten their path to a bachelor's degree. With Senate Bill 242, which is, I hear, a work in progress, you're working to make sure that more higher education budgets get spent on instruction and student success and less on administrative overhead. In the House, we're looking for ways to make textbooks more affordable. We're working on a transfer student bill of rights to make sure that students who choose to attend a community college have confidence that if they work hard and do well, they will have a place in an Oregon university and not have to worry that their credits won't be counted. In short, we're working to expand opportunity to all young Oregonians who have the skills and the proven ability and are willing and are able to work hard. With this bill, Senate Bill 742, you'll be removing another set of barriers to higher education. There's a group of young Oregonians who have been priced out of the higher education marketplace. Even though they've grown up in Oregon, attended school here, graduated from an Oregon high school, and been accepted by an Oregon public university, they are unable to enter the university. Why? As a result of their parents' documentation status, they're not considered to be Oregon residents and must pay between three and four times the in-state tuition rate that their in-state peers pay. and that's as much as $25,000 a year on tuition alone. They are effectively priced out of opportunity. For their parts, they've done their part to match our investment in them. They've overcome a number of barriers. In many cases, they're the first in their family to be able to graduate from high school and to become eligible for college. That dream of qualifying for college, getting a college degree, and a good productive job kept them going through high school. They could have been headed for the streets, for a life of being a burden on society, but instead they took the path that we want all young Oregonians to take. And then they hit this roadblock that holds them back and that prevents the state from capitalizing on the investment that we have already made in these young people. Federal law allows this roadblock to be lifted if states pass tuition equity legislation, and over the past 20 years, 11 states have chosen to do so. Texas, New Mexico, California, Washington, Illinois, New York, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Utah, Oklahoma, and Kansas. You may hear that tuition equity is not legal. In fact, no legal challenge to any of these states' programs has ever been successful. In fact, the most recent challenge, the one in California, was recently denied by the state Supreme Court, which ruled unanimously that the tuition equity statute is consistent with federal law. We are confident that Senate Bill 742 will meet legal scrutiny, and to that end, we've included a provision in the bill for direct review by the Oregon State Supreme Court. There are other objections that you may hear about the bill, all of which are tied to misplaced fears that tuition equity will lead to an increase in illegal immigration. You'll hear that tuition equity discriminates against potential students from other states. It does not. This nation's public colleges and university system is built on the idea that if you attend the public college or university in your state, you pay in-state tuition. If you choose to attend a public college or university in another state, you pay more. You can always move to another state, establish residence there, and attend a school in that state's education system at an in-state rate. That's not true for the young people that Senate Bill 742 is trying to help. They have nowhere else to go. You may also hear that giving in-state tuition to these young people will drain scarce state resources and shut out higher-paying students from other states. According to the Oregon University system, admitting an SB 742 student will not shut out any potential non-resident student who meets entrance requirements. We have no enrollment caps in our universities, and according to OUS, the system has room for both the in-state SB 742 students and out-of-state students who qualify. So the 742 students are not a cost to the system. They will not require additional expenditures by the universities. In fact, OUS believes that Senate Bill 742 will actually bring additional money to the universities. Without Senate Bill 742, these students would not be attending a university. With Senate Bill 742, they'll be adding their in-state tuition dollars to the university budgets. The Oregon university system has analyzed the impact of tuition equity on the states that already have it and have concluded that tuition equity will help state resources, not hurt them. And I think you have it at the dais, the OUS fiscal analysis that leads to that. That's one of the reasons that Oregon's university presidents support tuition equity. That's why the State Board of Higher Education is set to endorse this bill this Friday. As your committee administrator noted in the SMS, Utah, which has had tuition equity since the early 2000s, has come to this same conclusion. In 2008, their nonpartisan legislative fiscal office analyzed the impact of a bill that attempted unsuccessfully to repeal their tuition equity statute. Their analysis showed that repealing tuition equity would cost their state $1 million each biennium. That's one of the reasons that they chose not to rescind their statute, and that's one of the reasons that not a single state that has tuition equity has chosen to rescind their statute. You'll also hear that it makes no sense to confer degrees on students who will never be able to work legally in this state. There's a faulty assumption there. If we look at the 11 other states that have tuition equity, many of their young graduates are now working legally. Like their peers, many of them have married their U.S.-born high school and college sweethearts and have attained legal status as a result. Others have had work permits given them, arranged by employers anxious to take advantage of their talent and hard-earned skills. Others have successfully gone through the legalization process while in school or thereafter. Everyone in this room knows that we as a nation will eventually come up with some form of immigration reform, which will create a path to citizenship for those most able to contribute to our country. When that happens, those 11 other states that have tuition equity will already have an educated workforce ready and willing to take advantage of the law. Here in Oregon, if we do not initiate tuition equity soon, we'll have created a kind of lost generation without the high-level skills needed to succeed and to help move Oregon forward. Many of them will, in fact, be a drain on our resources rather than an asset. Is that really the route that we want to take? And finally, I want to address the argument that tuition equity rewards lawbreakers. These kids are not lawbreakers. They are examples of exactly what we want our young people to do. Work hard, get good grades, dream big. They're exactly the kind of kids we should be investing in. Many have lived here virtually their whole lives. They have no other country to go to. They have plenty to offer this state. But unfortunately, these kids have become the collateral damage of the immigration debate. They are being sentenced to lives without a future through no fault of their own. That's wrong, and it's not the American way. In this country, we don't punish children for the actions of their parents. We try to show them a better way and open up that better way for them. These kids are not asking for any kind of handout. They want access to opportunity, access to success, a chance to repay the people of this state for the investment we have made in them. That's what Senate Bill 742, the tuition equity bill, is all about. Colleagues, I urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is David Nelson. I'm state senator from District 29, which is basically Northeast Oregon, four counties out there. The public policy, I think, in this thing is what we're trying to get is educated U.S. citizens. And I think both the representative and senator have pretty much detailed all of the issues that are involved here. Just a few more things that I'd like to bring up. I think that what we need to do with this bill is look at lines 28 through 30. This is the one that's the intention of a student who is not a citizen or a lawful permanent resident. How do they express themselves, or how do they get to the point where they become a citizen or a lawful permanent resident of the United States? And I think, you know, that's the immigration laws, and we really do encourage that. If you go online and look at the, you know, what's required to become a U.S. citizen, it's a pretty detailed determination, and I have some concern just from the idea that this is going to be determined by the Board of Higher Education by rule. And so I'd like that. I mean, I think that language needs to be cleaned up a little bit in this whole process, just because I'm not really certain about it. When I read that, I think, geez, now how's that going to come about? How are we going to make sure that these young people are actually intending to become an educated U.S. citizen. And I think that's the intent that we really ought to be looking at. You know, I'm very supportive of the bill. And there's some other facts out here that probably we should talk about, is that right now we have one of the universities in the Oregon University system that is already doing this policy. And that's my university out in Eastern Oregon, in La Grande. They don't charge out-of-state tuition for any students. They do it for a marketing ploy. They've done it for 20 years. So I've asked them, how many, do you have some idea of how many illegal or undocumented students? They said, well, no, that's not our job. We're not the immigration people. Think we maybe have 20. I don't know. They said, well, we really don't know, because that's not the real focus. Community colleges don't really check upon the status of a student. And they can charge in and out of state tuition also. Well, I think most of the community colleges do not charge out-of-state tuition to states that border Oregon, but say, like, if you're from Montana, they would charge that. So there's, I mean, this process, we're already going through this process. We have people, young students already within the system that are undocumented and are still getting the education. So actually, in some respects, this bill is a tightening of the limitations that we have now on this thing, because these people can get this education in this with their status. But if our purpose is to educate a U.S. citizen, how do we get these young people on that path? I think that's really the key thing, so that they are going to continue, and in all likelihood they're going to. They've worked this hard. They're going to make it. There's probably not a lot of students that are going to be affected by this. It's going to be all those highly motivated ones. I checked on the military. Do you realize you can enlist in the military not being a non-U.S. student? You can do that, but you have to have some sort of sponsorship, whether it's a green card, or maybe it's a marriage, or maybe it's a sponsor from an employer or something, and maybe involved part of this, maybe the university system becomes the sponsor of these students and makes them a some sort of documented status. And I think that's the key that the U.S. immigration law is going to do. So, but the military has, I mean, I think from the Revolutionary War, they've always taken in enlistments who are non-documented students or non-documented people, probably. So I just think it's the right thing to do. There's some issues in here, probably, and you're going to hear the cost. At least the emails I've been talking about this mystical $17,000 figure out there. Well, I don't think that's a figure you ought to be looking at. An average cost to educate a student, whether it's in-state or out-of-state, is about $11,000. And each university is a little bit different. And each university gets a little different subsidy from the state to help pay for that tuition. So, for instance, like in Eastern Oregon, they get about 45%. Part of the reason they get that 45% is they don't charge out-of-state tuition. So, say a student out in Eastern Oregon, for clarity reasons, say they pay $4,000, or they get $4,000 from the state of Oregon. That's the subsidy that's involved. It's not the $17,000 figure or whatever that we're hearing out in there. But in return, that student has to pay back $7,000 to make up to the $11,000. So, in fact, the state is putting out $4,000, and they're getting $7,000 back. So they're actually making money on this thing. And a lot of these students probably can't afford to have a higher, to pay the out-of-state tuition. And the out-of-state tuition varies between the universities, I understand. You know, I think Eastern Oregon probably gets a bigger one. But they don't charge out-of-state tuition, you know. And like University of Oregon, I think over half of their students are out-of-state tuition people. So those are the people that are actually subsidizing in-state people. So it's a very complicated situation here, but it's a business decision. And that's how they're surviving, and that's how they're paying their bills. But, you know, if our goal here is to educate a U.S. citizen, we have to put those people on the path to become a U.S. citizen. And so that's what I think that we ought to be doing with this law, and I urge your support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions of our panel? Senator George?
Senator Nelson, when you talk about this cost issue, I want to kind of drill down a little bit more on this. In essence, what Eastern Oregon is arguing is that in-state tuition is covering the variable cost of an additional student. So their argument would be is they're making money because their overhead's paid for already. And so every additional student they add just allows them to cover all of their costs for that additional student plus make a little bit. That's why they're not, they figure they're not going to draw out-of-state people to Eastern Oregon.
That's right, yeah.
So what they do is they look at their costs, and then every additional student, then what they're arguing then is that they're covering all the variable expenses just with in-state tuition.
With in-state tuition, and plus the subsidy from the state. I mean, it's that $4,000. They get 40% of that $11,000 about.
Okay.
And, you know, I mean, it's a business decision for them because they're competing with Idaho and Southeast Washington, basically. And so they're drawing students from there. And they get a lot of students from that area. And so they have to be competitive and, you know, so to bring them into Eastern Oregon.
Follow up.
So if I understand their argument, then what they're saying is that they didn't get the students from Idaho and they didn't get the students from Eastern Washington, that actually in-state tuition would have to go up. Because in essence, some of those people are covering the operating costs. I mean, in essence, they're covering all their variable costs for the additional student plus some.
And what I'm understanding from the university is they probably will be starting to charge some out-of-state tuition, not to the amount of $24,000, but whatever it is to cover their costs in the next couple of years, just because we're going to be cutting their funds coming out. So it's a business decision for them.
I got you. Okay, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, Senator George. As we know, higher education is a high fixed cost enterprise, and we range from a high of, as Senator Nelson has indicated, 45% of general fund to support Eastern Oregon. We heard, as you know, in this committee that the University of Oregon is something less than 8%. So if you calculate, put your business hat on, you're going to want that tuition to come in. If you're not capping enrollment, you're going to want that tuition because it's accretive to the university and it's a benefit to all of the students who attend because you're covering those fixed costs that otherwise you wouldn't, because these students cannot afford to pay three or four times the cost of tuition. So from a fiscal standpoint, it's the right thing to do. From a moral standpoint, I believe it's the right thing to do, and would hope that our assembly would think likewise.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just have a brief question for Senator Nelson, and thank you, Senator Nelson, for telling me about your concern about the language on lines 28 through 30 about the rules. And so I just wanted to ask what would help clarify that if we had somebody from the Department of, from the State Board of Higher Education who might be able to discuss what type of rules they contemplate, or somebody from Legislative Council, because I'd like to see the bill move forward, and I want to make sure that we clarify your question.
And I don't have the answer to that. It's when I was reading over it and listening to the comments coming from the people coming in from the district, both pro and con, I got to thinking about it. The really thing we're trying to do is get an educated U.S. citizen. So how do we put these people on a path to citizenship?
Right. Maybe I could jump in, Senator. Most of the other states, and I think perhaps all of the other states, have language in their bills that say that students who who are qualifying for tuition equity will file an affidavit with the university indicating that they're in the process of applying for citizenship or will apply for citizenship as soon as they are legally able to do so. And I think most of the states are actually using a pretty similar affidavit form. It was first developed in Texas, and the other states have kind of followed from it. The decision here was made not to be that specific in case OUS, to give OUS some flexibility, perhaps to come up with a better way of doing it, but that is very much the intent of what we're talking about here.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we have a lot of people who have signed up to testify, a lot of people who have been invited to testify, and a lot of people who have driven from a ways to get here. So to be respectful to everyone's time here, given that I think we have more people than we have time, I ask you to be brief. Don't feel the need to read all of your testimony if you're going to be turning in written testimony. I'll try to be as fair as possible to both sides of
of this issue. So let's go to some students who have signed up. Jessica Garcia Farbud and Jafar, apologize for the mispronunciation, Zahara Muhammad. Are you here? Any of those three?
They might be in the overflow room.
Okay.
No, there's people standing here.
And the committee does have their testimony. We have that testimony in our packets. We also, by the way, have testimony from the university presidents supporting this bill. Welcome. Go ahead.
Sure. Chair Haas, members of the committee, my name is Farbod Ganjafard. I'm a student at Oregon State University and the co-chair of the Oregon Students of Color Coalition. The Oregon Students of Color Coalition is an integral part of the Oregon Student Association. The Oregon Student Association represents over 100,000 students at public universities and community colleges across the state. We advocate for affordable and accessible education for all Oregonians. I first want to acknowledge that we have a full overflow room today, and we also have hundreds of letters of support from students and community members across the state who cannot be here. I'm here today asking for your full support of Senate Bill 742, Tuition Equity. I'll kind of shorten my own story, but like many others, my family came to this country looking for the opportunity to succeed. My mother began attending Oregon State University, because of her residency status, had to pay out-of-state tuition. My aunt began school after my mother and received her residency in Tillamook, and she was only charged in-state tuition. Even back then, when they went to school, the rate was still significant. Thankfully, through their hard work and determination, my mother and aunt were able to receive their degrees from Oregon State University, where I attend today. My family understands the struggles and differences between in-state and out-of-state tuition. You're going to hear from some other students who are affected by Senate Bill 742, Tuition Equity, and I'd like to share the story of another student with you. I was born in Paracho, Michoacan, Mexico, and moved to Oregon when I was 12 years old by my mother. My mother left Mexico trying to give us a better life after my father was killed. My mom came to the U.S. first with my brother, sister, and I because she had no future with us in Mexico after the death of my father. I've always lived in Oregon, and I consider myself an Oregonian. When we first came to Oregon, I attended elementary school at Harold Oliver and then at Floyd Light Middle School. When I got here, I started the sixth grade, and I knew that I needed to learn to blend in. I learned a lot just by practicing, watching TV, and reading. I began taking night classes in the sixth grade to learn English. They were provided to the community at my middle school, and I attended with my mom and my uncle to learn English. It's because of this night class that I was able to fit in more and work on my education. I spent a lot of time making sure that I had the right skills necessary to communicate. After Floyd Light Middle School, I attended Centennial High School, where I graduated with a 3.0 GPA. I participated in Earth Club, Mecha, Migrant Education, Summer School programs, and was a varsity wrestler. I learned a lot of things wrestling that I now use in life, like respect, timelines, and discipline. High school wasn't all fun and games. While I was heavily involved with clubs and organizations, I still worked over 30 hours a week. I worked at a local fast food restaurant, and we had bills to pay. We couldn't just depend on our relatives. My brother, my mother, and I worked too. We needed to do what we could to survive. All through high school, I was pushed and supported by my teachers to go to college. I tried to apply to PSU, but once I got to Part 17 that asked for your status, I stopped. I didn't talk to anyone because I was scared to tell people and that they would tell me that I couldn't go to school. I'd given up, and I knew I couldn't afford to pay for a university degree. Things were out of reach. After my involvement with the Oregon Leadership Institute, OLI encouraged me to attend Mount Hood Community College. I'm now in my third year at MHCC and plan to graduate this year with my Associate of Science Transfer degree. I'm involved at MHCC. I'm a member for the OLI, MECHA, and I'm also heavily involved in student government. Starting today, I'll be the new Vice President of the Student Government at Mount Hood Community College, and he's actually being confirmed today as the Vice President. I like being involved with student government because it allows us to have a representation within our student body. I enjoy the work that I do representing underrepresented communities, and it means that we allow everyone to have a voice. Our state has invested so much in me by providing me with a K-12 education, and I don't want that investment to be wasted because I can't afford to attend a university. I want to use that investment already placed in me to do good things. I still have hopes of attending a local university and getting my degree. I want to go to a university and study mathematics, be a mathematician. Math has chosen me. I love it, and it loves me. I can't put too much thought into what I could be, though, because a university degree is still out of reach for me. The passage of tuition equity would allow for my full potential to be met. You'd allow me the opportunity to afford in-state tuition instead of possibly paying up to 3 times as much, which is so out of reach for me. I want to further my education because I have the goals of giving back to my community. I want to be a role model in my community and to my family. Tuition equity is about justice and not about just us. Chair Haas and members of the committee, I want to thank you for your time and the opportunity to share this student story with you. It's difficult to know for me that students that worked as hard as I did, who shared the same dreams and aspirations to succeed and contribute to our state, are not joining me at an Oregon university institution. I'm passionate about the positive impact of tuition equity and the impact it will have on our state. Please support Senate Bill 742. Thank you.
Again, don't feel the need to read your testimony if we all have it up here. Maybe you want to just highlight what you have to say and speak from the heart.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Zahara Mohammed, and I'm a sophomore at David Douglas High School. I'm appearing before you today in support of Senate Bill 742. This bill has personal meaning for me and could improve the lives of many people like me, children of immigrants and refugees who have no control over how and when they are brought to America, but who love this country and this state and want to build our lives here. My mother came to America in December of 1994 as a refugee from the Rwandan genocide. When she fled here, I was still in her stomach. She lived in a series of states along the East Coast before moving to Oregon to live permanently. 3.5 months after she arrived in the United States, she gave birth to me. Like many of the students we are discussing today, I didn't choose to move here, but here I am. I was born here. I am a proud citizen, and tuition equity will not apply to me personally, but if even a few events outside of our control had been different, it would. Had I been born a few months earlier, had the circumstances of our journey to America been different, I might be in the same place as those classmates of mine who need tuition equity to attend college and pursue their dreams. Many of these kids are brought here in nearly the same way as me. It is unreasonable to treat them differently. Forcing college students that have grown up in Oregon and attended Oregon high schools to pay a different amount than I will seems rather absurd, especially considering how similar our situations are and how the differences are entirely out of control. Senate Bill 742 offers students like me, some of whom came to America out of life or death necessity, the opportunity to pursue the American dream and to do right by the state that we love, to get a good education, to get a good job, and take care of our families and give back to our community. Today, good students who have grown up in Oregon are being priced out of an education. Because of my family's experience, I understand firsthand how difficult school can be for immigrant families, but we persevere. We do the best we possibly can, and many of us achieve great things. Our ability to succeed should not end the day we graduate high school. I am so grateful for this state that allows me the opportunity to go to college with in-state tuition. But it's sad to think that if my circumstances had been just a little different, that opportunity would not be accessible to me. I hope that we can change this inequity. I hope we can bring tuition equity to Oregon, and I urge you to pass Senate Bill 742. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Jessica Garcia. I'm 16 years old and a sophomore at North Eugene International High School. I was born in Michoacán, Mexico. I'm 16 years old, but I have lived in the U.S. since I was a year old. I have 4 siblings. My older sister wanted to be an archaeologist. My older brother wanted to be a firefighter. Now I want to become a microbiologist. These are all careers that would benefit the community. I also enjoy running, as it is one of my favorite things to do. Right now, I am in track and cross country. I am also a member of the North Eugene Metro Club and ICE, Equity Youth Educators. And I have a 3.72 GPA. However, the most precious thing for me is my education. It is one of the things that I value the most. Without tuition equity, my dream of being a microbiologist may be taken away. But the hope I have of a country where all its inhabitants have equal rights without limits will always remain. Microbiologists analyze the smallest of details to learn how it functions in this world. Now I ask you to analyze the deepest part of your heart and choose yes to tuition equity so we can learn how to function in this world together. I want tuition equity to pass because all students in Oregon deserve the right to an affordable education. Moreover, at a time like this, our state needs to capitalize on its investments and build a competitive and educated workforce. I'm striving to become a better leader, an educated individual. There are students just like me all over the state, and our future is blocked until tuition equity passes. I'm passionate about my community. I'm passionate about learning more about science. I believe that I can continue to do this and be more successful with the access to an affordable, quality university education. I have great support from my mom, my friends, and my teachers. I'm confident I will do something great in life. I plan to keep up with my studies and work hard. I will graduate from my high school. I'm not going to give up. I'm in a position to do great things, and all I need is the opportunity to pay affordable tuition like all my peers. I hope this legislature will take this opportunity to pass tuition equity and help all Oregon students see higher education as an accessible option. Please support tuition equity. Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica. What college or university do you hope to attend?
Well, since I'm in an IB school, I plan to go to maybe an IB if I get accepted. But if I don't, you know, just Lane Community College.
Okay. Questions for our panel? Thank you.
Thank you.
Paul Kelly, Roy Koch, Greg Harmon.
Good afternoon. Chair Haas and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Roy Cook. I'm the Provost and Vice President for Academic Affairs at Portland State University, and I thank you for the opportunity to talk with you today about Portland State and, by extension, the university system support for Senate Bill 742 and the importance of tuition equity. The presidents of Portland State, the University of Oregon, and Oregon State have strongly supported tuition equity for the children of undocumented immigrants, and they've expressed their support for Senate Bill 742 in a letter to the chair, I believe. At Portland State, we're committed to the enhancement of educational opportunity that eases the transition and creates more effective pathways for students to move from K-12 to higher education. This is precisely what Senate Bill 742 would do. By 2025, one in four students in the K-12 system in Oregon are expected to be Hispanic. Currently, only 56% of the state's Hispanic students ultimately complete high school. Without the promise of college, these numbers certainly won't get much better. Education is a pathway to success, and we're blocking access to it by charging out-of-state tuition to students who may have attended every single year of K-12 in Oregon. Not only is this inequitable, it's wasteful. Because these children are allowed to attend elementary and secondary schools in our state, we've already made a huge initial investment. We should build on that investment rather than toss it aside. Tuition equity is the right thing to do. Because of our declining economy, this is also the right time to institute it. You have a choice to allow students to continue their education or condemn them to a lack of education and increase the likelihood of their dependence on state services in the future. If you choose education, you're not only helping these students, you're also helping build Oregon's future economy. Just so it's not simply abstract, the cost of tuition for an in-state student at Portland State University, this is a typical student, is about $6,000 a year. Taking the exact same course load, it currently costs over $17,000 a year for a student from out of state. Children of undocumented immigrants are unable to get federal grants or loans, making college virtually impossible. Oregon is doing better than some states. Two don't even allow children of undocumented immigrants to enroll, regardless of the rate of tuition. We leave the door cracked in Oregon, while those states slam the door on their children's futures. We need to go further, however, and join at least 10 states that already allow access to higher education for undocumented students at in-state rates. Even though court challenges exist to some of these laws, it's the right thing to do to move forward with this legislation. Federal law requires Oregon to invest in a K-12 education for all Oregon students, regardless of documentation status, and should require the same for higher education. In the absence of federal legislation, it is incumbent on each and every state legislature to act. Otherwise, we shut the door on many students by charging expensive out-of-state tuition. Few, if any, will attend if they have to pay out-of-state tuition. As provost, let me assure you, we want these students on our campus and in our classes. We want to help them become productive citizens of the state of Oregon. I urge you to support Senate Bill 742. Thank you for your time, and I'd be pleased to answer any questions you may have.
Senator Haas and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Greg Heyman. I'm president of Lynn Benton Community College. I believe that one of the principal roles of public education is to create stronger communities, to build better places to live and to work. And I think we do that by increasing educational attainment and by increasing the economic capacity of our community's residents, our community's members. The students who are impacted by Senate Bill 742 are residents of our communities. They have attended and have succeeded in our community's high schools. They have attended and they have succeeded in our community colleges. And they have the capacity to succeed and to contribute back to the communities that they are residents of, if we let them. Charging these students out-of-state tuition creates an impediment not only to their success, but to the strength of our communities. And I encourage you to support 742 tuition equity for that purpose. I believe it makes good sense for our communities, and I think it creates equity for our students. Thank you.
Thank you both. Questions, Senator George?
John, real quickly, we've heard testimony now that this is not going to cost the state any additional money because, in essence, the in-state tuition rate covers the variable cost of an additional student attending a university in the state of Oregon. Mr. Koch, in your testimony, you said that in-state tuition is $6,000, out-of-state tuition is $17,000. It's an $11,000 difference. So is the $6,000 cover the cost of having an additional student at Portland State University?
No.
Okay.
We balance the enrollment through recruiting non-resident students and by trying to provide access to all qualified Oregon resident students. And we try to make that balance so that we can reach the $11,000 per student number that Senator Nelson noted. It's been our policy as an institution to admit those students who have demonstrated their capability to succeed in the system based on our admission requirements and other sorts of evaluations, and to try to support that effort by making sure we have enough of those $17,000 per year students so that the balance actually does provide the capacity for us to meet the goal.
Chair, would it be possible, hypothetically, to come up with a number, a new tuition number, not out-of-state tuition, not in-state tuition, but some type of other tuition number that would cover all variable costs of these students attending your university, meaning they're not getting any state subsidy, they're paying their full cost of the variable costs, and the fixed overheads of your university can be covered by a mix of public support, all these different things. Is there a way to come up with a number where these students would cover 100% of their variable costs and we basically would say they don't have to pay any of the fixed costs, but they could access the system, be higher than in-state tuition but lower than out-of-state tuition, but it would just be the variable cost. Is that possible for you guys to identify a variable cost number of what one more student costs at your university?
What we can certainly do is identify what we actually invest in every individual student. We know that's about
$10,000 or $11,000. And we know what our tuition is. We know what the state contribution is. And we know that those two together don't add up to that number. So we use the subsidy, if you will, provided by non-resident students to balance that. So we know what we pay currently to educate a student at Portland State.
Senator George?
What I'm looking for is you have 10,000 students at your university. It costs you this much per student. Mm-hmm. If you educate 10,001 students, what does that one additional student cost the university? And that's what I'm trying to get at. Yeah. It seems like to me that's really the only question. Like mm-hmm. all the emails I'm getting on both sides, that comes down to the question, which is there a public subsidy for the student? And if we can get the students to cover 100% of their variable costs, mm-hmm. then we basically kind of don't have a real big issue here.
Right. Well, the answer to your question is it really will vary.
Okay. That's fine.
And let me just say a couple of things about why it will vary. There are capacity in some programs we have. There isn't capacity in others. It's sort of like the airline seat model, mm-hmm. right? So if we're offering a class so that we can offer a major and there are seats in that class, then there's a small incremental cost, if any, of having an additional student. If we have a program that's fully subscribed and we don't have room for an additional student, then there's a substantial cost in expanding the program to meet that. So, on average across the whole university, we could talk about an average number, but what that next student would do would depend specifically on where they
program
might be.
Program area.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Jim Ludwig, Fred Yates, and forgive me if I can't read your writing, Del Sutton Velez. D. Del.
Okay. Hi, I am D. Sutton Velez. I'm against Senate Bill 742. That gives in-state tuition for illegal aliens. I come from Hispanic poverty. My mom and her parents did the migrant factory work here in this country, and this past year, the three of them passed away. But all they ever wanted for me was a chance for an education and a better life than they had. Recently, I was in a car wreck. I'm sorry. And my knee shattered in three places, and it was after a rally here at the Capitol, and I could no longer do the maid work or mow Governor Kitzhopper's parents' yard for $4 an hour because I can hardly walk. And I would love to finish my education, but the rates are so expensive on my very limited income, and I've been too proud to ask for help. But, you know, a lot of times, poor, minority, disabled, learning disabled Hispanic people cannot get the help they need. And it's in due because of the competition out there of poverty that is receiving benefits. And lots of them are receiving benefits illegally so. I just don't think it's fair or right to give college in-state tuition to illegal aliens when lots of American citizens of diversity and poverty, and even with me with disabilities, are being discriminated against when we are denied our own citizens the same opportunities here in this country. I am constantly discriminated against for having a learning disability. I was not given accommodations when I state tested to work for the DMV. They said I had to perform the test like everybody else that taken the test, and yet they can give accommodations to people that don't even speak the language. I just hope that you'd understand that many Americans, Native Americans, African Americans, and poor Americans shouldn't have to be pushed aside due to states accommodating illegal immigrants. It is illegal regardless of their heritage. I feel for them. I'm Hispanic. But it does not make economic sense during a time of a recession. This would only escalate the problem of illegal immigration, rewarding behavior that is not okay. These are not children. These kids are actually adults. They're 18. They're graduated from school. and I feel very strongly against in-state tuition. I had a girl live with me that went to school in Oregon. I called her Menina. She was Hispanic. Her father was a migrant worker, and he was put in jail. And her parents, because she remarried, and her stepdad and mom made too much money, and when she came back to Oregon, was charged out-of-state tuition. She wanted to become a nurse. She was living with me because she was homeless and living in her car. She worked 40 hours a week, and they wanted to charge her out-of-state tuition and give illegal immigrants in-state tuition and charge Menina like all this money would be unfair. It would be very unfair. She is right now studying to be a nurse. She is a wonderful person. She went to school in Oregon, was only gone out of state for 6 months because her parents moved her senior year. And so what I'm saying is there are many minorities in this country that are here, American citizens, needing help. And right now we are in an economic crunch, and we need to help people of diversity that are legal American citizens. And by giving benefits to illegal aliens, it makes it so much harder for the rest of us here, because this is rewarding behavior that's wrong. Thank you for your time.
Questions or comments? Senator Morris?
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, my name is Jim Ludwig. I'm with Oregonians for Immigration Reform. Before I give my testimony, I'd like to say something about Representative Dembrough's statement that no state has rescinded giving in-state tuition to illegal aliens. That is simply not the case. In 2006, Arizona voters put Proposition 300 on the ballot. Proposition 300, if it passed, would have ended in-state tuition for illegal aliens. It passed by 72% of the margin. 72% of Arizonans voted against giving in-state tuition to illegal aliens. It is the only public vote I've ever seen on this subject, and I feel confident that if you went outside this building, you would get the same percentage of Americans who would be opposed to Senate Bill 742. 742 would give in-state tuition to illegal aliens. At the University of Oregon, the difference between in-state and out-of-state tuition is about $17,600 per year. $8,200 for in-state tuition, $25,800 for out-of-state tuition. If this bill would pass, it would mean an illegal alien would get a $17,600 per year benefit, a benefit that would be denied to an American citizen who happened to go to high school in Idaho or Washington or Montana or California. A legal immigrant or an out-of-country student that would come here legally, play by the rules, would be punished by having to pay $17,600 more in tuition than somebody who's illegally here. In 2003, the Capitol Fiscal Office did a financial on Senate Bill 10. Senate Bill 10 is a mirror copy of the present Senate Bill 742. They stated that the cost to Oregon back in 2003 would have been $780,000 in the first biennium, $1.64 million in the second biennium. Now, that was using data of $13,000 difference between in-state and out-of-state tuition. It is now $17,600. Using the 2003 Capital Fiscal Report as a guide and factoring in new tuition rates, the cost to taxpayers for this bill would be $1.2 million the first biennium and $2.5 million in the second biennium. There is a cost to us, and we shouldn't have to pay that. The state of Maryland has a similar bill. Like Oregon, they've defeated it four times previously. Their fiscal office states that if they were to pass in-state tuition for illegal aliens, it would cost the state $3.5 million a year. Even if the Oregon legislature were to pass this bill, and even if an illegal alien would go to an Oregon college and get a degree, they couldn't legally use it. It's against the law for somebody who's illegally in the country to work here. Last year, Congress failed to pass the DREAM Act. The DREAM Act, if it had passed, would have allowed states to give in-state tuition to illegal aliens.
I need you to back away from your microphone.
Oh, sorry. I get carried away. It didn't pass. In 1996, Congress passed the Illegal Immigrant Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act. In that act, they put a poison pill, Section 505, and you can see it in my testimony. In essence, what it states is, any state that wants to give in-state tuition to illegal aliens has to give it to everybody, no matter what state they're from. Senate Bill 742 does not do that. Senate Bill 742 discriminates against American citizens by making them pay higher tuition rate than somebody who's here illegally. The code word is this tuition equity. I hear that all the time. How is it tuition equity if an American citizen has to pay $17,600 more in tuition than somebody who's here illegally? How is it tuition equity if a legal immigrant or somebody coming from a foreign country in a legal manner has to pay $17,600 more than somebody who's here illegally? I urge you to vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Senator Hass, members of the chair. My name is Fred Yates. I'm from Linn County. I'm in total and complete opposition to Senate Bill 742. And to the authors and supporters of this bill, I asked exactly what part of our nation and state is beyond flat broke, don't you understand? Who do you think is going to pay for all of this? Not the government, it's we, the taxpayers. We that are being burdened with all of this. And as I listened to everybody's testimony so far, we don't have an illegal alien or an undocumented worker problem. We have a foreign invader problem. These people that stream across the borders do not have the best interest of the United States in mind. And as I stood outside in the halls and I listened to the people talking around me, they were all speaking in their native language. They refused to use the English language. We're a great melting pot because we have a common language. Rome and Greece both fell because they didn't have a common language. The European Union is a disaster because it does not have a common language. Okay. I'd like you to ask yourselves these questions. Why do the authors and supporters of this bill desire to honor foreign invaders with a gift of $70,000 to attend our colleges? Yes, it's $70,000 for 4 years. Everybody keeps focusing on this $17,000. Let's talk about the total cost. Okay, why aren't they working towards eliminating the foreign invader problem instead? And how can you rationalize this as a moral argument when they're breaking federal and state law by being here illegally? Okay. Clearly, the hidden intent of this bill seems to be some inane desire to give away what we, the taxpayers, have worked to a group of people who don't give a rip about our society values or our way of life. Last, this bill is in direct violation of federal law. And the federal law I'm speaking of is Section 505 of the Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act of 1996, which my colleague over here, my co-testifier has already documented for you. And I thank you very much. I'll answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Mr. Morse.
If I might, what would you do with these youth that have lived here for most of their lives? What's your solution?
I don't have a solution to it. The problem is we haven't eliminated the problem to begin with, and we continue to let it grow. I agree there needs to be a solution, but it needs to be an equitable solution. This young lady spoke to it. There's people across this country that can't get an education because we're busy helping people that are here illegally.
More jobs.
More jobs would be a wonderful, be a great start.
Like, I know a lot of people who can't find work right now that would love to go back to work.
Senator George?
I don't really like, just because I'm libertarian at heart, I don't really like to look at groups. I like to look at individuals. So in earlier testimony, and this is where I'm having a hard time, in earlier testimony we heard about individuals who came here when they're 4 or 5 years old, sometimes younger. They don't have any family in their original homeland. Their family came here perhaps illegally. But as far as this one child, I don't care what happened to their family, as far as the one child, they came here. They're here now. They've basically been raised as an American. They know nobody back in Ukraine or Costa Rica or wherever they're from. They know nobody there. They have no family there. All of their family's here, perhaps illegally, but they're all here. They were raised here. They may only know English. They may not know, you know, Russian or Vietnamese, okay? They're here. They were raised American. They went through our schools. They're here. They don't know anything about their former land. From your perspective, they're undocumented. They're illegal aliens. Should they be sent back to that country?
Can I respond to that?
I just try to get an idea.
Certainly. Senator George, every week you read about children who are 18, 19 years of age who've come into the country illegally. They don't know the language. Why is it such a problem for them? Why is it not a problem for them to come here when this is a foreign land to them instead of sending somebody back? I mean, it can't be bad one way and good the other way. But even more importantly, we're a nation of the rule of law, where we expect everybody to obey our laws. Obviously, it doesn't always happen, but at least that's the expectation. And I've talked to people who've come from Mexico, and one of the reasons they left Mexico was because there was different levels of law depending upon your stature in the community. We don't want to become that. At least I don't want to be a nation where one group of people have one law and the others have another. This breaking down what is the value of American citizenship and setting up different levels of law depending upon whether you're legally or not here is wrong. We should be forced to obey the law. Those who don't want to obey the law shouldn't be rewarded for it. As to what would people do if they're here, and they, you know, what would I do with them? Basically, we should require that our laws be honored. And if we don't give people who are here illegally driver's license, if they can't get subsidized housing or food stamps, which they do get, if they can't get a job like a lot of Americans, and there are, what, 220,000 Oregonians out of work, many of them will leave. That's been demonstrated in Arizona, in Oklahoma, where they've denied them those rights. So I don't think we should give them more.
Senator George.
Jim, I guess of all the places to break your pick on this type of issue, the person who is the most sympathetic in this entire immigration issue, the people that are most sympathetic in this entire immigration issue, happen to be these children who have lived here for a long time. Whether you like it or not, we write rules all the time that have loopholes. I mean, you can think we live in a rough, but if you have money, you can pretty much do what you want in this country. So, you know, please understand, that's what we do as a living up here. So my problem is that I can agree with you that on immigration policy, we need to have stricter rules, and we need to have a rule of law. But when you're talking about a group of people who their parents take them from one place to another without any control of theirs, they didn't break any law because they wanted to, and they were forced to live here, and they became Americans through culture, not through citizenship, but through culture, they became Americans. They speak our language, they go to our schools, they participate in our sports. This is the one area where it seems like to me we at least have to have some kind of compassion that this individual who is affected negatively in this situation, I mean, I think that what you need to do is there needs to be a law that says, if they're willing to get a college education in this country, then we want them. That's an asset to us, so we'll give them citizenship. So if you get through this country and you get a college degree, you get a citizenship. Because I don't want them going back to Mexico. I don't want them going back to Ukraine. I don't want them going back to Vietnam. I want them here with an education, bringing the smartest and brightest here. So of all the immigration policies, you know, that we can have a discussion about, this is the one that seems like to me, there's got to be a way to fix this problem. And earlier I was talking about, and I'd love to hear all your... I was talking about this idea of a tuition rate where we cover the variable expenses. And the question is, if this didn't cost any additional dollars, the taxpayer dollars, would that change your guys' opinion?
Well, I have a solution.
No, because it's illegal. Nobody had compassion when my daughter was struggling for her life at the Emanuel Trauma Center when she was denied a colon surgery. We had our own health care. We made too much for the Oregon health plan. And yet there were illegal aliens in that place getting services. There were children being denied operations and things that they had to do with back surgeries and cancer, and we don't think anything about discriminating against our middle class children in this country, but we're going to accommodate people that are coming into this country illegally so and draining our society. Eventually things will fall, and the one thing that's going to fall is the middle class, because the rich people will go abroad and we will not have a middle class left. we will not have people in the middle to accommodate all your jobs here at the state. Eventually, it will be like Soviet Russia if we keep allowing everybody that wants to come into the country illegally and be accommodated. You have to draw the line. And right now, we are in a super bad financial state, and we have to draw the line. And we cannot keep carrying people that are coming here illegally. And I'm sorry that they're Hispanic and they're poor, and I'm Hispanic and I'm poor, but, you know, I was denied on the Oregon health plan, and my insurance did not pay for my physical therapy. And, you know, so you know, as far as compassion goes and stuff like that, we need to follow the Constitution, and we need to uphold the rule of law. And it has nothing to do with racial heritage or anything like that, because I am the most compassionate person when it comes to poverty, because I've come from there. My grandparents did the factory migrant work, and we struggled for years with failure in school and the lack of college. And I finally am the first minority in my family to ever go to college in three generations that endured failure, that couldn't even get through the high school system.
So. Senator George, let me respond, because I have a solution. It's not one I like. Why doesn't this body vote in-state tuition for everybody? Every American citizen. I mean, you keep hearing how it's such a benefit to the university system to have all these students come in. Just give in-state tuition to everybody. You'd be in compliance with the 1996 Illegal Immigrant Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act. If you have compassion for people, how about compassion for poor Americans? Or how about compassion for an American whose father is in prison and they don't have a good life? Why don't you have some compassion for them? Let's just give in-state tuition to everybody. That would satisfy federal law. It would satisfy your conscience. I wouldn't like it, but let's be true to that. Don't discriminate against American citizens. We're seeing that all the time, and this bill does that.
Senator Shields. Thank you, Senator Hess. I appreciate the point that you made about health insurance, and I just want to let you know that in another committee that I'm in, the General Government Committee, we're working very hard to make sure that health insurance companies are justifying their premium increases and their business practices. It's something 88,000 people are losing their health insurance in the private market, and I want you to know that that's
not lost.
Yeah,
we were able to
us.
Get on the Oregon health plan, being the lost wages for my daughter, which she had her colon surgery. But now the Oregon health plan wants to sue our pain and suffering claim for me to have rehab in my leg and for me to get better for my knee replacement. They want to sue to pay back their money that we took from them. And that's to carry some illegal alien that came into this country illegally to have children, and that's not right. And my pain and suffering money should be left alone. It should not be going. And that little girl who lost all feeling in her hand, who was paralyzed by this accident, should not have to go, have to return any of that money, because everything that she gets from our insurance should go to bettering her life in some way. She has been taken, something has been taken from her, the ability to use her hand. She has plates in her neck and lifelong of disabilities because of this accident.
I hear you. I'm not sure that there's a direct tie between undocumented and the pain.
Well, it's just that
Let me finish my point, if I could, because I was about halfway through. So the other point that I was wanting to make is that Jim and I have talked about this before, and that really in many ways this legislative session we're going to have to find common ground on a variety of issues. And one that I wanted to call to your attention is that on Monday in the General Government Committee we'll be holding a hearing on Senate Memorial 1, which will encourage Congress to pass the Trade Act, which is a fair trade bill, because at the root of this is the issue of why are we so many Americans losing their jobs to begin with, and why are people coming to this country because they can't make a living in their own country. And I think we do have some common ground in our point of view on NAFTA, GATT, and how that plays into it. And if you're interested, we'd love to have you in that committee on Monday, March 7th, Senate Memorial 1.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Shields. Duly noted, you managed to plug not one but two of your own bills.
The committee hearing is not over.
Thank you for your testimony.
Okay, thanks.
I'd like to call up Ann Galiski, Cynthia Kendall, and Gerardo Zanita. And thank you in advance for respecting our time constraints here. If you could be very brief.
Clock. Okay. My name is Cynthia Kendall, and I live in Salem, Oregon. I'm a U.S. citizen, a taxpayer, and a lifelong Oregon resident. I would suggest that this idea be dropped. Again, this has been brought to the legislature 5 times now, and I think that the citizens of Oregon have made it very clear that this is not something that they want to do. I do feel compassion for these students that are kind of stuck in this situation, but I also don't feel that it's my responsibility to foot the bill for their continued education. If they were brought here as a child, I have already paid for them to go to school for 12 years. I don't feel that it's my responsibility to continue to pay for their education. There are a lot of people, my future daughter-in-law is in this pool, of people that are going to the University of Oregon. She is paying out-of-state tuition. She doesn't have the benefit of in-state tuition. She's working 2 jobs. Her parents are paying a lot of money for her to get an education. And yet, for a young lady who isn't politically active, I was telling her about this bill, and she became enraged. She said, How is it that people can break the law and get a benefit? I don't understand that concept. And I have never seen anybody go from being not politically involved to over-the-top politically involved. She would be here today if she didn't have class. It's inconceivable to me. The people that come here break our laws, disrespect our culture, and then are standing there continuously with their hand out wanting more and more and more things. And I am a little bit more than disturbed that our legislature is entertaining many bills to validate the presence of illegal aliens in our state. And I'm concerned that this makes us a magnet state for more illegal aliens. As states across the country tighten their belts to try and resist an overflow of illegal alien populations in their states, it has to squirt out somewhere, and they're coming here. Great resistance to the E-Verify bill. We want to have, there's legislation being presented to repeal the driver license requirements to prove citizenship to be here. It's, why are you doing this? Are you so desperate for support from an illegal alien community that you shun the taxpaying citizens of this state? I've just gotten really frustrated. I totally went off what I wrote because so many people said everything that I said before, but I think it boils down to, these are people that are in our state illegally, and you are asking the taxpayers of this state to pay for them being here to continue their education, and I don't think it's fair. Thank you so much.
Comments?
Chair Haas and members of the committee, my name is Ann Galiski. I am a proud Oregonian. I'm a business owner, and I'm the director of a documentary film called Papers. It's stories of undocumented youth. In the process of making this film, which has screened across the entire country in every state and was produced in Oregon, I had the opportunity to meet many young people without documents and interview them and find out about their lives. It's very risky for them to come before you to tell their own stories, even though some of them have today, but they are wonderful, wonderful people, and you know, they don't just identify as Americans, they identify as Oregonians. We have some of these young people in our state. You've never met more dedicated, loyal people to our state and to our country than these young people. They were brought by their parents to this country. Some of them are so dedicated to continue on in their education. They will do whatever they can to stay in school, and it's extraordinary, even with facing this barrier of paying 3 times the tuition rate, they still try to become the valedictorian, still try to get straight A's. I do want to address something that I think hasn't been looked at in terms of the numbers. These young people, it's not a matter of if they're going to pay the out-of-state tuition or pay in-state tuition. If they're facing paying 3 times the tuition rate, they just won't go. There will be the occasional person who will be able to put that money together, but it's not that we're going to miss out on that money, we just won't get that money. So this bill that I'm in strong support of will bring more money into our system. It'll bring more money to our state coffers, because these students will be paying cash. They will struggle every quarter to pay tuition fees and for books. Many of them, most of them, will be living at home while they do this. Sometimes an entire extended family will be pooling their money together to get this one student through school. I do also want to address the subject of scapegoating. I don't deny that there's a great deal of pain in our state and in our country. And we've heard some of that from the other people who testified earlier. I think to put our pain and suffering and resentment on those young people does all of us a disservice. I think we need to do this, pass this bill, because it's good for all of us. We're not just doing something that's good for someone else. We're doing it because it's good for all of us. It makes good economic sense. It makes good moral sense. Okay. And thank you for your time. Also, I wanted to let you know, I'll be happy to give any of you a copy of the film or any of your colleagues if you think that would be helpful.
Thank you.
Chair Hassan, members of the Senate Education Committee, my name is Andrea Miller, and I'm here today to represent Gerardo. Gerardo is from Bend, Oregon, and he was unable to make it despite how much he wanted to be here today. To make the 2.5-hour drive here, the path was a little bit snowy. So he left me with a letter that I want to share with you, and I think it is so essential to hear the stories.
We have it.
Okay. Hear the stories from those living in Central Oregon. He says, my family migrated to the U.S. in 1992. We arrived in Madras, Oregon, and made it our new home. I grew up in Oregon and consider myself an Oregonian. I attended the Oregon schools for elementary, middle, and high school, and I graduated. My dream then, and still is today, is to study pre-med and eventually become a doctor. But my dream has halted by the simple fact that I didn't have a valid Social Security number that would allow me the means to afford an education. I'm going to shorten the story a little bit to in respect of time. But he goes on to say that my parents, with encouragement and with the little money that they had, made it possible for me to attend class at the community college in Bend. Yet they did not have enough for me to finish the entire year, and I had to drop out. Over the span of 10 years, I've taken classes here and there whenever money could allow it. I have not given up on my dream, but I have come to a roadblock as an undocumented immigrant that has to pay international tuition. There is one thing that is clear from my experience. The Oregon University system would not be losing money from students like myself because of tuition equity, because the steep out-of-state fees are nearly impossible. Instead, the universities would gain in-state tuition from students who would now be able to afford and enter the university system. I'm a hardworking Oregonian who is determined to not give up while we wait for the federal government to fix the immigration system. But I need the help of our elected officials here in Oregon to do the right thing in the meantime. We need this body to not give up on my generation as it gets ready to enter the workforce, a generation that can do more for our community as doctors than in low-wage paid jobs just trying to make ends meet. Please support Senate Bill 742. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. We have time for one more panel, and I want to call up Samantha, Monero, Lucero, Castaneda, Eduardo, and Golo.
Hello, Chair Haas and members of the committee. My name is Lucero Castaneda, and I've come here today from Central Point, Oregon, to voice my support for SB 742. I am here urging for your full support of SB 742, tuition equity. SB 742 is about opportunity, investment, and advancement for Oregon and its Oregonians. In a time where our state is struggling, it only makes sense to allow students to bring money into the Oregon University system. Tuition equity won't cost anything. It will likely bring tens of thousands of extra dollars into our schools. My tuition and fees continue to increase every year. I can only see tuition as a positive policy that would allow all qualified Oregonians to have a chance to pay a college education. This is a year
that Oregon can join 11 other states that include Wisconsin, New York, Texas, California, and Washington in implementing tuition equity. Students across the state support tuition equity. K through 12 educators support tuition equity. Our universities and community college presidents support tuition equity. Now we ask you, our elected officials, to please support tuition equity and vote yes on Senate Bill 742. Let this year be the year that we pass tuition equity. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Hi, good evening. My name is Samantha Villagran Moreno. I'm 16 years old. I'm a junior attending Eugene High School, and I was born in Mexico. I arrived to the United States at the age of 6. I only live with my mom and my 2 siblings, and I haven't seen my dad in 10 years. I enjoy dancing and cooking. My favorite class is culinary arts. I also enjoy playing soccer and running. I belong to CAUSA, Nor Eugene Mecha, and Juventud Faceta. I'm inspired to become a chef because I love to cook. Cooking is a passion that runs in my family. I look forward to the day when I'm free to serve not only food, but serve the community. Cooking is in my hands, but tuition equity is in yours. My mom's dream come true every day. She tells me when I die, all I'm gonna leave you with is an education. And I just wanna make that happen for her.
Thank you, Samantha.
Good afternoon, Chairman Haas and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Eduardo Angulo. I'm the chairman of the Salem Kaiser Coalition for Equality. We are a coalition of the community organizations that help the Latino community throughout Oregon. Members are PECUN, the Farm Workers Union of Oregon, CAUSA, the Pro-Immigrant Rights Coalition of Oregon, Mano a Mano Family Center, Latinos Unidos Siempre, our youth organization, and the Parent Organizing Project. I was appointed by Governor Kulongoski to be part of the Race to the Top design team. And I had the opportunity of working with some of the brightest educators throughout Oregon in trying to work at finalizing the application to those federal monies that were being given by the Department of Education to those states that I don't know how to put it, that will show plans that they were on the road to have some of the best public education systems. Unfortunately for us, we came out 39. We came out 39 precisely because in Oregon we have 70,000 English language learners, and we know that our public education has not served these kids well. Over 95% of these English language learners are American-born to Spanish-speaking monolingual families. For the past 12 years that we created the Salem Kaiser Coalition for Equality, we have made a commitment to educate the parents of most of these students to become partners, teachers, aides, supporters of what's happening in the classroom, to help Oregon close the achievement gap in our public education system. When we hear stories like these, two young Latinas, we can clearly see why the moral imperative of our country drove us to have our Supreme Court judges make compulsory education the law of the land. Our Congress passed the No Child Left Behind reaffirm that moral imperative that any child that is in American soil is entitled to equal education in the K-12 system. Here in Oregon, we have spent billions of dollars educating our students, and we still have an achievement gap. But we know that we created, that our country created the, this is hard. Yeah, created the mandatory, the compulsory, in order for us to make an investment on our students. And it is so unfortunate for our economic prosperity that we cut them off at the 12th grade. So at the moment when these students could, with just 4 more years or 2 more years of education, can become the taxpaying, the ones that contribute, also contribute to the economic prosperity of our state, of our nation, we're cutting them off. So in so many ways, we are betraying our own moral imperative that we want all these students, and we have heard from so many of them, that they really want to do right for our state of Oregon, that they consider themselves Oregonians. They consider themselves Americans. Let's support Senate Bill 742. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Especially our thanks to the two young ladies. Questions, comments? Thanks to all who came and heard this. Unfortunately, we are out of time on this. My hope is that we will spend some more time with this and look at some amendments and take action on it.
Thank you.
I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 742. We're still. I'm going to open a work session on
We're still meeting.
Senate Bill 250.
No, we're still meeting.
Folks, we're still in a session here, so we're still in a session here, so you take it out in the hallway.
I know.
Hey, sweetheart. You did a good job. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
No, we're still in session.
Thank you. Thank you, you too. But we're still in our session. So do you have any classes with Mr. Gorlick?
Okay.
Tell him I said hi. Bye-bye. We're still having our meeting, but thank you very much.
Thank you. Committee, just another day on higher education. One of these days we'll have to go back. Yeah. These are the Dash 8s, which is a refined version of the Dash 6s from the other day.
Can you go on?
There are two key changes on the opt-out apparatus, if you will. And the keys are the dates. The opt-out change will go into effect in 2014, which is 2 years later than we had, except for the...
Mr. Chair, would you mind asking the people in the room who are talking to go out? It's just distracting. Yeah. Still people.
Okay. Folks?
Thanks.
We need you to...
So I'm sorry, I missed what you said in the last...
I'm not going to repeat. I was just saying this is the refined version of the Dash 6s, and one of the changes is it moves the opt-out to 2014 instead of 2012, with the exception of Willamette ESD and Baker County, in which this will occur immediately. The rate change will occur immediately. That still stays the same. So did you want to come up here in case there are some questions? And then the other, you saw the revenue and fiscal notices here.
No.
The idea is the next step for this will be in revenue, which oversees school formula changes. So those are the major refinements to the amendments we walked through the other day. Mm-hmm. Essentially, with the exception of those date changes, they are essentially the same.
And say for the record again, yes. I guess two issues. One would be the rate at which the district would withdraw. What percentage of their revenue do they take with them?
It's still 90%, but they receive 100% of their 90%.
Right.
That hasn't changed.
Right, I don't believe. Right. Cindy Hunt, Department of Education, I believe that's correct.
And I'd be remiss to say, Senator Morris is on the Revenue Committee along with me, and his amendment for an administrator of overseeing ESDs is still in the works, and it's my hope that we can adopt that in revenue if it,
yes.
As we used to say in the news business, all the good parts are true.
We have a draft.
Okay.
But we have some work to do, and I say draft conceptual amendment. And I would look forward to discussing that in revenue. I apologize for not getting this done in time for this committee to do it, but I believe it's in keeping with the direction that we're going.
I think so. Senator Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the staff measure summary, which I assume does not address the Dash 8 amendment, and could you point to me in the Dash 8 where, or perhaps Cindy could, where the change of date for potential opt-out moves to 2014?
Yeah.
Page 2.
Page 2.
Section 3. Mm-hmm. Line 26.
Mr. Chair, I would move the Dash 8 amendment to Senate Bill 250, dated March 3, 2011.
Senator Morris moves Dash 8 amendments to Senate Bill 250. Is there discussion? Is there objection? If not, the Dash 8 amendments have been adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 250 is amended with a due pass recommendation and be referred to the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee by prior reference.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 250 as amended with a due pass and be referred to the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Senator Shields?
Thank you, Senator Hess. I'm trying to think back of all of the amendments in the original bill, which I don't have up on my computer right now. But was there a sunset date in this bill or in any of the amendments?
I don't believe there was a sunset.
No. Chair Haas, Senator Shields, I don't believe there was ever a sunset date in the original bill or in these amendments or the prior version of these particular amendments.
Okay. Good. So just if I could make some comments.
Sure.
I think I mentioned to the chair that my constituents aren't very shy about complaining to me about various agencies, and I haven't seen a whole lot of complaints since I've been in the legislature about the Multnomah ESD. Some people have suggested, well, that could be because they don't really know who's providing the services, that there could be some complaints out there. I am concerned about what would happen to the districts in Park Rose and others if times got tough, Portland Public Schools decided to go after the money because the money was there, and how that might affect the services. So I just wanted to talk out loud about that. I think where I am is I will support moving this bill on in the process. It will allow some further refinement both in the Senate and in the House, which I appreciate. but I also would like to move the bill along at the request of the chair and support your work on this, and I would like to reserve the right that if it doesn't pop up onto the Senate floor in a version that I'm comfortable with, that it could be a no vote on the floor.
Thank you. Mr. Chair?
Senator Bonamici.
I have, similar comments to Senator Shields, except that I have heard concerns, primarily because I sat through the discussion last session as well on the Education Committee, and this long discussion this session, and I really appreciate all the work on it. I'm not convinced that we're at the place where we need to be yet, but as Senator Shields said, I appreciate the work on it, and I'll support moving it along to the committee, but still am for further work. I'm a little confused about why I think sending to the revenue committee sort of presupposes that's the appropriate approach, that we'll take the revenue committee work. It seems like it's policy that should be determined in this committee. That being said, I know you want to have that discussion and about that issue in revenue. I actually like Senator Morse's amendment as well, and hope that we can continue to work on that. But I am concerned that we haven't quite reached the right approach yet. But want to make those comments and put that on the record, because just as Senator Shields said, if it comes back in a way that I'm not comfortable with, I may not be able to support it. And wanted to let you know that, because I know you put a lot of work into it, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that, and I know these concerns. I also know that we've had a lot of testimony in this committee from educators who want this, especially the Salem-Keizer area, and I know the concerns, I think, is what prompted the move out to 2014. We will meet in session in 2000. We'll meet in session. There will be two sessions before then. And we will be able to watch, as Cindy has pointed out, the Petri dish, what happens, good or bad. And there will be plenty of time to make any necessary changes, repeal the whole thing if necessary. But I do think that the activities of WESD and other ESDs in this state, if our job is to try to squeeze administrative savings out of the educational system and put it back in the classrooms, which we hear from our constituents all of the time, then I think this is a pretty good place to find it. And I very much appreciate people throughout the Education Committee who have come to us and said, this is what we need to do. We had a conference call today, again, with the Baker County folks and with some other Eastern Oregon people. This is very difficult. And this is, however, one of the easier steps I think we can take as a legislature if we're going to solve this this budget situation we have, particularly for the biggest budget that we have, which is education. So this is still a work in progress. I'm the first to admit it. We're moving it to the Revenue Committee, where Senator Morris and I make up 50% of that committee. And we'll go from there. Further comments or discussion? Objections? Seeing none, the motion passes. I now close the work session on Senate Bill 250. Thank you again, folks, for your patience. We are adjourned.